which collapsed the Gaza division and cast the Israeli security establishment into disrepute within the society in Israel. And so what we're seeing is the Israeli military taking it out on the civilian population in the Gaza Strip as an attempt.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned. Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. The show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in the Ganyagaha language and Muniyang in Anishinaabe Mohan, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end in English and in French. I'm your host, Sarah Day, live in studio on Thursday, February the 8th, 2024. What a mild evening out this weekend. You definitely don't need to batten down the hatches this weekend because the temperatures are really just right to warm up in the theater and check out local art. We have lots of things ahead for you this coming hour. We will mark big anniversaries in the dance world. Dance-iversaries, if you will. The legendary Margie Gillis is in town for her company's performance of Littérature du Corps. She is marking 50 years in the business, and she'll be our first guest this evening. Before the end of the hour, Claude Caron is the artistic director and choreographer of Ballet West de Montréal. The company is marking 40 years of dance and education this week. We'll find out about their special show and their tour around Quebec later on this month. Also this hour, we have two plays about forgotten people in society, both shows written by Black Canadian woman writers. Xander Chung is going to speak with one of the stars of Diggers, Black Theater Workshop's new play by Donna Michelle St. Bernard. It launched a week ago tonight. I caught it last night, and you have until the 17th to check it out. Then we will also preview Imago Theater's The Flood by Leah Simone Bowen. It's set in a basement prison that houses women in 19th century Toronto. We heard a little bit about the show from Imago's AD, Krista Jackson, last month, but Ajani Poirier from Imago will join us to flesh out the full picture. It's a story with many different angles, and even though it is set in Toronto, there's a lot of themes that are still very current and important today. There's a lot to get to in The Flood, and a lot to get to this hour. You can follow us for updates and images of our guests and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. You can also DM a message us there if you like. What I really like about the image that I posted for this week's show is that all of the press images that I pulled from the four different productions we're talking about, there's a real flow to them. Not just because we're talking about dance, but if you look at the images yourself, you'll kind of see. So see for yourself. Visit us on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. We'll take a short break here. When we come back, we will get to have a chat with the grand dame of Canadian dance, Margie Gillis. Stay tuned.
Gem Art Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, Gem Arts is presenting the film African Redemption, The Life and Legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Men Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm really thrilled to get to speak with our next guest this evening. Margie Gillis was a guest on Upstage some years ago, and we had a really great conversation. I would liken her to a grand dame of dance here in this country, also known across the world as well, has been in the business for some 50 years. And the Fondation de Danse, Margie Gillis, is going to be presenting Littérature du Corps this weekend at Théâtre Maisonneuve, presented by Danse Danse. It is partly a retrospective, but also a look to the future for Margie and her company. And she is marking a half century of being in the dance world. I'd like to play for you, before we commence, a little bit of archival audio that I found on the interwebs. This is an interview from 1987.
This performance phenomena, who fires up audiences throughout the world, is now back in Toronto, performing tonight and tomorrow in her new show, New Dreams. In just 6 years, Margie Gillis has taken both Canada and the world by storm. She breaks all the rules, she takes daring risks, and performs, according to Dance Magazine, like a stick of dynamite. Kevin Currier talked with Margie Gillis.
It's been a busy year, but a really good year. I've really felt happy. I'm really excited. I really am about this program that I'm bringing here, and
That is an interview that Margie did back in 1987 on CJRT-FM in Toronto, and I was poking around on the interweb and pulled that out. So that is some over 30 years ago, nearly 40 years ago, that piece. She is marking a half century of being in the arts, and it's nice to mention that she's also a member of the Order of Canada, as well as the Chevalier of the Ordre National du Québec, in addition to all the work that she's done. Margie joins us on the line. Welcome back to Upstage. And I'm going to get your sound up there. Hello, Margie. Welcome back.
Hi. Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So how does that feel to be at this point where everybody wants to celebrate you and look back at all your work, but you are still busy creating and teaching, I believe, as well?
I'm creating. I'm performing. I did a new solo show this year about aging. And this work, finally getting it up on stage with 16 artists from Canada and from the U.S., Mexico, and some of the creators. It was a larger group of people that were in on the original creation. We're 16 dancers on stage, 17 with me. I will be doing a guest cameo at the end of the show with the dancers. And I love the work. I really love it. One of the pieces is based on a solo that I did to James Joyce's Molly Bloom. So we have Stephen Dedalus, we have Leopold Bloom, and we have Molly. And it's just a tribe of fierce women, and it's just delicious. And the first piece is about the fact that we are losing the world. We're in climate change, where most of the world are refugees, and we stand to lose a lot. And we need to be compassionate towards those who have already lost a lot. So it's a look at that. What is the essential sensations, feelings, and compassions that we can bring up and utilize when we look at what it is to lose everything that holds us solid?
And we'll mention that those two pieces, of course, will be presented by Danse Danse at Théâtre Maisonneuve on Friday and Saturday evening. Appropriate, James Joyce's birthday is February the 2nd, so we are in that month of February. To do a piece inspired by the Irish writer's work and his characters in Ulysses, were you someone who was always a fan of James Joyce? Because the people who love him are passionate.
Yes, that's true. I first heard a recording of Molly Bloom's Yes speech when I was traveling across country, and the person I was traveling with had made a recording And we were listening to a tape of it, and it was just phenomenal. And then there was a point in my life where I just needed to hear the word yes, 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 yes. And I was hearing far too many no's. And I delved into his world, and I just found it very raw and brilliant. And he wrote basically Molly's, the inner life of a woman, Miss Molly, who was based on his wife, Nora, and her reflections and her dialogue with him. So it's wonderful to kind of now reclaim that as a female choreographer and bring that forward.
Oh, that makes me want to ask you about what it is to be a female choreographer. Have your work spanning 50 years now. Do you find it's easier for young female choreographers to break into the business compared to when you were starting out? Do people ask you for advice on that?
I think it's really hard to be in the dance community now. It's tough. COVID really wiped out a lot of the support and a lot of the stability in our community. So it's a really, really challenging time, and I feel just blessed to be with these dancers and to be sharing it on stage. I just, it's wonderful, and I'm so grateful to have had the career that I've had and to have the passion that I have and to be able to share that passion with others. It's very important to be able to dance for an audience. I love dancing for trees. I love dancing for nature. I love dancing for my own deities and angels, if you will. But when you share common humanity in a raw and beautiful way with an audience, it's a thrilling feeling. And I love it. Whether I'm on stage or I'm off stage in the audience, those moments of magic that transcend and change us and shift our perspective and open us up to new ways of thinking and feeling. And when it is the body, it's a deeper understanding. The yes is very profound. It's not just an intellectual yes. It's a total experiential yes. And so I love it. Just love it.
You're hearing from choreographer Margie Gillis, as you heard, is going to be on stage this weekend for Littérature du Corps. So the piece Bloom is a solo piece that you are, it's an older piece that you're revamping for this performance, but there's also
with
a new...
With 16 Molly.
Yes, it's not a solo show. There's going to be 16 people on stage. Just thank you for clarifying. Quite different. And then the other piece, as you mentioned, is a newer piece, and it's looking at climate refugees and the realities of climate change. Has this been a topic that's interested you from an artistic point of view for a while now, or is this more a recent discovery?
I've been an activist since I was very young. I've been dancing since I was 3, a professional for 50 years, and I've been an activist since I was a child. I've always been interested in the greater coming together, as I call it, what is essential to being human, what is the nature of ourselves and the fact that we belong to nature and are not separate from us. So I have been involved on a lot of for peace, for in AIDS research and support, anti-nuclear, just since the word go, I've been an activist. So I continue, and I think that women's rights are important. I don't think you can be a humanist without being a feminist. But you need to we need to have compassion and uplift. Uplift those who need our help.
What do you find?
Make world better.
What do you find, Margie, is a continual source of inspiration for you as you create and perform?
I'm curious. I'm very curious. And I think that also my mom and my Aunt Rhoda, my mom's twin is now 102 years old. And she is one of my dear, dear friends. And it's curiosity. We just are curious. What is this? How does this feel? A little more, a little less? What's the quality of the thing? How do we change? How do we shift perspectives? How do we open up perspectives? How do we change from stiffness to flexibility and juiciness in our bodies and our souls? How do we keep vivid and alive? And how do we help change the world for the better and stand up when it's needed?
Margie Gillis, it's been such a pleasure to have you back on the show. Thank you for taking the time, and have fun in Montreal this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be so lovely. We are really, really thrilled. First night is almost sold out and looks good for second night as well.
Oh, and I believe you're also going to be meeting with the audience. You just mentioned your passion for performing for people and not just trees. So if people want a chance to connect with you, there will be a post-spectacle talk on the Friday as well. Thank you, Margie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was the very talented Margie Gillis, and so wonderful to speak with as well. That's why I really wanted to have her back on the show. So Littérature du Corps, there's two parts to it, Bloom and the piece about climate change. And so that is going to be happening, of course, this coming Friday and Saturday evening at Théâtre Maisonneuve, Place des Arts. For tickets and more information, you're going to want to visit Danse Danse online. Head to placedesarts.ca for tickets specifically. They're $48. 514-842-2112. The time is 6:15 and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Still to come on the show, Margie's marking 50 years in dance, but we'll learn about a ballet company that is marking its 40th. Find out how. We'll also learn about the flood. And up next, Xander is going to speak with Chance Jones, who plays Abdul in Diggers on Now at the Siegel Center. But for now, we'll leave you with some Alison Russell performing Shadowlands. Alison was raised in Montreal and she won a Grammy for a Best Americana album, I believe it was, at the Grammys on Sunday. So congratulations to Allison. I know that she's probably got a lot of fans here. I think she went to school down the street, if I'm not mistaken, at FACE. Don't come for me if I'm wrong on that, but very exciting weekend for Allison Russell. Stay tuned here on Upstage. Listening to some Alison Russell, Montreal born and raised, now officially a Grammy winner as well. Wonderful Americana singer. Listening to her music, Shadowlands there. I can't wait to get my hands on the full record. That's on my to-do list for the coming weeks. Something I did last night was check out Diggers at the Siegel Center Studio. It's a new performance by Black Theater Workshop. One of the things I loved, the sound design, the music set was really interesting as well. And we tried a few weeks ago. We didn't end up having an interview on, but I said, you know what? We got to talk to the folks at Diggers. And Xander, you are going to be helming that. So thank you for doing that. How are you doing, Xander?
Always great.
Sarah. Yeah, you're always looking great.
Oh, hell, thank you. I've been working on my drip.
I'm really excited to hear your interview with Chance here. So let's get underway.
So today we're talking to Chance Jones, playing the role of Abdul in the upcoming Black Theater Workshop drama, Diggers, by Donna Michelle St. Bernard at the Siegel Center, from February 1st to the 17th. Chance, it's always a pleasure. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I feel honored. You guys hear me fine?
Oh, we hear you loud and clear. We're 8 days into the run. How is it going?
It's going fantastic. Every single time, you know how it is with theater, or I hope you know about how it is with theater. It changes every night. It's a different feeling every night. So I haven't gotten to that point where I'm like, okay, are we doing this again? No, I'm always excited, always happy. The run is going well. People are receiving it really well, actually.
I'm really happy to hear that. And yeah, no, that's the one thing that I absolutely adore about theater. The fact of the matter is, you know, you got the same actors, the same director, sure, but every single detail, you got so many moving parts, and all of those parts are human. And every night, it's always a different person, always a different audience, and it's great. And speaking of, right, you're on stage when the doors open, the first actor that the audience sees, you know, how does that, I wonder, how does that affect you as a performer? Like, for, does that affect your preparation, your perspective on the show, as opposed to just traditionally waiting in the wings?
So, it's one of the things that I genuinely love about theater is, I love to get into the mindset of the character. I like to build my world as much as possible. So this was something that, like, well, how does it feel to do that? It gives me a moment to, like, away from my other actors, away from the stage manager, away from everybody else, to really build my life within that play. So that when you guys walk in, for me, it's like the play has been going on for 15 minutes beforehand. You know what I mean? Does that make sense to you? Like, so, like, it gives me an opportunity to get in character without being interrupted or have to talk to anybody. Like, Chance really enjoys that, so it's one of my favorite. Like, I had to ask for it. Like, this wasn't planned. This wasn't written inside the script. They literally were like, "You don't want to do that." I'm like, "You don't know me. I live for this. Okay, put me on stage for 30 minutes. I'll stay. I'll do it every day."
So you're playing Abdul, part of a duo here, along with Solomon, played by Christian Paul, acting to introduce a newbie, Bay, played by Jahalani Gilbert Norin, to introduce this person to grave digging. What can you tell me about Abdul and how he kind of fits into this duality here, teaching this newbie?
Well, when we picked up the script at first, in the table of contents, like, we have that as well, they would describe Abdul as a mid. Not like he's mid, like he's not that cool, no. But, like, yes. Solomon would be considered a lifer, Abdul a mid, and by a newbie. And I think that's a perfect way to describe the duo between everyone is Solomon's been doing this for his whole life. Abdul has just started to, like, kind of do this and buy his new. So where he works within the play is Abdul is a person that's still torn between his old life and this life that he's made a decision to do. Does that make sense? So, like, he's a very, very bitter man because he hasn't really stuck to his own convictions yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And also, you know, Abdul, throughout the show, he kind of scoffs at the two other diggers' efforts to stay optimistic and grounded. How does he stay grounded, you know, as the performer? You know, you've got 15 minutes to really get into that character before every show. Is it different from your own approach to, like, keep your feet planted?
It's a funny question. You ask me how does Abdul stay grounded within a world where there's a lot of imagination, a lot of hope. And he's a very, like, Abdul in himself, he's a very practical person. You're not going to stay here. He's not going to sit there and dream with you. So, and that's a very different way in which I go about my life, in a sense. Like, I have a lot of dreams. I'm an actor, obviously. But he's very set in trying to make sure everything is, like, very practical and very realistic. He doesn't want to talk about anything that's, like, outwardly of that kind. So how I keep him grounded and how he keeps his sanity and what keeps him sane is he talks to the audience, which is talking to himself. You know what I mean? He has moments to himself that he doesn't share. He lets every moment of happiness, when he's supposed to be happy, he lets that happiness be, but only for select few. He doesn't lie to himself. How does it translate to my life? In a sense, yes. I think I'm a lot more quick to allow people into my happiness and into my world, but than Abdul is. But I feel like the way he stays fully grounded within his life is to just do the work and keep his head down. The more he questions and the more time he has on his hands to think about what's going on, the angrier he gets. And I think that really is a great parallel to what we had to deal with when we had the pandemic.
Yeah, and speaking of the pandemic, right, the show talks about community and solidarity, you know, the importance of essential workers, you know, these grave diggers, you know. I wonder, does performing or even just being exposed to the show, you know, flipping through the script, you know, being present at the first read through, just talking about it with your, you know, your co-stars, you know, how does it affect the way you look back at the past 4 years?
Oh, wow. Great question. Does it affect me how I look back at it? Yes. Since we're playing essential workers, it really did make me gave me a moment of pause of like, how did I treat people who were essential workers? How did I treat my nurses? How did I treat, in terms of like service, like very well, but I mean, in terms of like the people in my lives, whether I knew they would be going into the public every single day, was I a little bit more like reserved with them? Did I not want to be around people? And I feel like, now that I've done this play and now that I've gone through and thought about that mindset, I have a lot more empathy and more understanding of what they could have. And it's just a very small bit because I'm just acting, but I have a really, really soft place for people who really did that work because it's not easy. They're basically being blamed for when it spreads, even though people are out there still doing their business. You know what I mean? So it's one of those kind of things that it gave me a lot of perspective. That's what it did. It makes me look back at it with a lot more perspective. And if I could go back and help more, and I say this, and I'm not just saying it because I'm on the radio and why not? Let's sound like a good guy. No, if I could have done more, I think I should have done more. And I think fear in itself was the only reason why I didn't. Fear and laziness.
Well, I think, you know, we all get lost in the din with our own anxieties and fears. You know, during the lockdown, we're stuck with the internet, which is just this perpetual fear engine that's feeding us more and more statistics and so on and so forth, right?
Absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, this show looks back at that, but it kind of looks forward too, right? It mm-hmm. makes us want to look at how we can do better, how we can be better. And, you know, how we as a community can properly react to things a bit better with this hindsight in mind. Has that kind mm-hmm. of affected how you now engage with the communities around you as a performer, as a person, as just a free agent capable of their own decisions?
Wow. That's a deep question I never thought of. Does it change how I interact with people? I think theater in itself always, regardless of what the play is, if it's a great play, and I think what we have here is a great play, I think theater always has a moment for you to reflect upon how you treat people, how you think of people, and how you're going to receive them. And I think this play also does make me think about that as well. It makes me think about how well I treat or view people who are doing those hard jobs. I don't know if I'm answering your question. It actually stunted me a little bit. But it does definitely make me think of how I would like to treat people. Do I know how that's going to change in the future? No, but I think good theater always makes you think about how you will receive the rest of the world. I don't know if that answers your question. I pray it did. I hope it did.
I think that's a solid answer. I mean, theater and art is all about communication, right? And in a way, you're kind of working to add your own performance to the words. Like, you're being a performer, you're adding to the words that are on the script. The director is giving you directions to then build upon this greater and greater and larger message. And, you know, it's really important to recognize that. And it really does seem like this show is intent on exploring those ideas.
Absolutely.
You're listening to... Absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
No. I thought. I know you're done. Kill it. Do your thing.
Not a problem. You're listening to the voice of Chance Jones playing the role of Abdul in Diggers, a show by Donna Michelle St. Bernard with Black Theater Workshop at the Siegel Center between February 1st to the 17th. For more information, tickets can be found at siegelcenter.org. Now, I got one final question, you know.
I got one final answer.
Awesome. Now, if Abdul were standing at the crossroads, just this ephemeral crossroads, you know, that leads to his town with the play that is about to happen, or Montreal circa March 2020, which one would he pick?
Wow. Which one would he pick? If he had to choose between our pandemic and his pandemic?
Pretty much.
What would he choose? I think he would choose his. I think he would choose his for the fact that he had people around him and he had purpose. You know what I mean? I think our pandemic is very different, and I think his role in our pandemic would have been a very different role. He was in a very comfortable place with people he knew, and was surrounded and with a town in which that embraced them. I love Montreal as much as I can, but I think Abdul definitely has a lot more connection to. He would have a lot more connection to his roots than here. Does that make sense?
That does, and I.
And also, I think he wouldn't have been on his phone. I think he would have hated the whole phone aspect. You know what I mean? We had TikTok. You know what I mean? He wouldn't have cared.
I definitely get that. And honestly, I think that's something we ought to all take to heart, right? You know, maybe we should get to know our neighbors. Maybe we should get to know the people next to us or around us, you know, accept one another just a little bit more. You know, you never know when we're just all going to be locked in together. We might as well, you know, make the best of it. Chance?
I mean, we were locked in together. And
exactly.
We did our best with that.
Perfect. Chance, I have to say, I am truly grateful to see more shows willing to not only look back, but to look forward as a result. And it's through performers like you and authors and directors and just artists in general that make it all possible. Definitely looking forward to picking up my ticket.
Oh, I hope to see you there. And if you do, stick around so I can give you a nice little handshake and hug. All right, my man?
Always looking forward to it, Chance. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Xander and Chance Jones. You can catch Chance and the other members of the cast, including the very talented Warren Cesarello. Ugh, my heart just stopped every time she was on stage. In Diggers, it is at the Siegel Center until February 17th. February 11th is a special blackout show for the community. Check that out. Very interesting new thing that they're doing for the audience. Tickets and more information, siegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. Still to come this hour, Ballet West de Montréal marks 40 years. But next, we will learn about The Flood. It's a play set in a basement prison in 19th century Toronto. Stay tuned.
Black Theater Workshop presents the world premiere of Diggers by Donna Michelle St. Bernard. Abdul and Solomon introduce newbie Bai to the intricacies and dignity of grave digging. But when illness hits their town, they must make the best of a bad situation. Full of song, laughter, tears, and beautiful humanity, Diggers is a tribute to essential workers. Catch Diggers at the Siegel Center Studio from February 1st to the 17th. Get your tickets at siegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944. More information at blacktheaterworkshop.ca. This is a Black Theater Workshop and Prairie Theater Exchange co-production and CKUT co-presentation.
Tu t'es occupé de ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. We still have under a half hour left. Two conversations for you this evening. Thank you so much for being a part of this hour of Radio About Theater. Up next, we're going to learn more about a show that we got a glimpse at last month, The Flood, by Leah Simone Bowen. We had Krista Jackson on, the artistic director at Imago Theater. Give us a little preview about that show. It will be opening a week from tonight at Centaur Theater, running until the 25th. It's directed by Yvette Nolan, and I was immediately seized by this when Krista brought it up, because I love a play that delves into real stories and history, and this one in particular takes us to St. Lawrence Market. Did not know this place was a thing. It's like going to Marche Atwater, but it is a very old building in downtown Toronto, and for a time where you can now buy pierogies and Peru's coffee and chocolate shops, there was a prison there, specifically a woman's prison. So Leah Simone Bowen, the author, has dug into the history here and has created an intersectional play that, even though it is set over 100 years ago, I think will still speak to audiences today. We're going to be speaking right now with Anjani Poirier, who is the new literary and dramaturgy associate artist at Imago, studied playwriting at National Theatre School of Canada, Montreal native, based here now, and joins us on the line. Good evening. Welcome to Upstage.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Anjani, before we begin talking about The Flood, I was curious to know more about your new role at Imago. You're someone with a lot of playwriting and acting experience. What does a literary dramaturgy associate artist do?
Great question. Like you said, I am a playwright, and a big part of playwriting is dramaturgy when you're working on a new script. And I feel like that's a term that if you're in theater, you kind of know what it means, but it's also a little bit elusive because it means lots of different things. So in this context with Imago, I'm doing a lot of different things. I'm working on doing a lot of research. We create a study guide in the form of a zine, which is really cool for every show. So I'm doing a lot of that research and putting that stuff together. I'm also working with Imago's youth mentorship program, Artista, as a mentor. So we're working over a couple of months with a group of fabulous young people, and then together we're going to create a show, but it's a lot about guiding them to find their own artistic voice. And then a lot of, I'm also helping facilitate talk backs. A lot of different things.
And one of the things you're working on in particular is you are in charge of Imago's first relaxed performance for this particular play, The Flood, which, as I mentioned, is February 15th to the 25th, at Centaur. So what can we expect at a relaxed performance? Who is this for?
Great question. Yeah, so a relaxed performance welcomes an audience with various access needs who might benefit from a reduced sensory experience of the show and also a casual audience environment. So in a relaxed performance, we're reimagining traditional social expectations of an audience. That means our audience members are welcome to walk around the theater, to come and go if they need to make noises, to stim, to, you know, any kind of thing that in a with traditional societal expectations of an audience would be seen as maybe disruptive.
Yeah, distraction. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not. That's just the way that some people exist in their bodies and exist in their minds. So that is the idea of the relaxed performance is making a space for folks with access needs that would manifest in those ways to see the show. The show itself will have some reduced sensory experience, meaning like light and sound will be reduced. There's also a space outside of the performance theater space. We're calling it a chill out zone, where people can go and like take a breath, take a breather, read, relax, lie down, anything you might need to like have a little break from the experience of seeing the play. And then we're also creating an access guide. And that is like a digital PDF that has a lot of information about the show to prepare people. Like we've got a storyboard, what to expect at the performance, information about what the theater is like, what getting to the theater is like, just stuff for folks to get a sense of the show, the vibe of the show, what they can expect. And we're also going to have a lobby display that will be available throughout the run of the show, so not only for the relaxed performance. And this will have elements of the set, some elements of the sound that you'll hear in the play, and like tactile elements, like stuff for people to get a sense of the show before going into the show. And this is something that is built in for the relaxed performance, but I think really everyone attending the show will like could get something out of it.
That is the voice of Anjani Poirier, who is the new Literary Dramaturgy Associate Artist at Namigo, walking us through some of the work that is part of making the show more accessible. And the show in particular is The Flood by Leah Simone Bowen. And some people might recognize that name. Leah Simone writes, but is also known as a host at CBC Radio, particularly for a show called The Hidden History of Canada, where she's delving in with her co-host into all these hidden chapters. You just mentioned about how there's going to be a little pamphlet explaining what happens in the show. It's really a show that needs that because there's a lot going on. So before I let you go, I just want to reset what The Flood is about and where it is set. This is a prison mm-hmm. in the basement of a historic building in Toronto.
Yeah.
Tell me about the two women at the heart of the show. This is like a show that covers so many different angles. It's like the definition of an intersectional piece. Tell me about the two women we meet here.
Absolutely, yeah. So the show is set in the prison under the St. Lawrence Market, which was literally under the market, and it's set in the spring. So water, as things melted, would literally like just go into the windows and flood these prison cells that people were living in. And you're right, it's a very intersectional show. There's the two of the main characters. Well, there's actually, I don't know, when you say two main characters, I feel like all of the characters really have. Yeah.
There's three, there's a lot of other performers, but there's three kind of at the heart. And then we also meet a prison guard who's played by the wonderful Jimmy Blay. So there's a lot happening. One is a woman who's pregnant, an Irish immigrant, Mary. Another is a woman who's been vilified. They're forming a bond. And there's another inmate who's kind of on the outside, I think more, Sophia. Maybe you can tell me more about Sophia's experience.
Sure, yeah. So Sophia is, she's a Black prisoner. She is based on a real person, a real woman named Sophia Pooley, who was an enslaved person brought to Canada. And she had, her life was recorded through an oral history and is in a book that was what inspired this character. So the character herself, she's pretty tough. She's pretty no-nonsense. All of the women who are in this prison have been put there as, like, a punitive measure based on, like, very sexist, which is almost, like, a nice way of saying it, but, like, terrible circumstances where they didn't, this is like they didn't commit a quote-unquote crime, but at the time it was the norm to like lock women away if they were inconvenient or if they had a disability, if they were marginalized. So the women that we see, like Sophia, the Black prisoner, imprisoned woman, was extremely marginalized in the circumstances that she was in, and that is what landed her there. And so it's really this like very beautiful glimpse of like the connections between all of these women and how they rely on each other to survive in these really harsh circumstances and how circumstantially they also have conflict and have to make hard decisions.
My last question for you is, I'm sure you're sitting in on rehearsal now. What has struck you about the play? What is something that you're loving about it?
It's so beautiful. It really, like, there are so many moments where I'm just, like, well up with emotion. There's something really, really wonderful about these characters. They're such full characters, and they have such beautiful relationships to each other. And even when things are really hard, it's a play that deals with a lot of really tough subject matter, but it's presented in a way that feels hopeful. And I think that is a really, that the playwright has done something really skilled, and all of the artists have put it together. But yeah, it's we describe it as beautiful and brutal.
Well put. Mm-hmm. Well, that's terrific. Thank you so much, and Johnny, for coming on Upstage to tell us more about the show. I'm sure we'll chat again soon, and good luck with the work that you're doing into making this show more accessible to all audiences. The very first relaxed performance. I'm going to grab that date in just a moment. And Johnny Poirier, thanks for being on Upstage.
Thank you.
That is the voice of the Literary Dramaturgy Associate Artist at Imago, and Johnny Poirier. So nice to chat with her on the show. The first relaxed performance that Imago is going to be presenting, let me pull this up here, February 24th at 2 p.m. That's right towards the end of the run. On February 17th at 2, there is a mask mandatory performance, which will also make this more accessible to a certain audience as well, for people who feel a lot safer being able to go out with a mask still on. So the show opens a week from tonight at Centaur and runs until the 25th of February. For tickets and more information, visit imagotheater.ca. Tickets are $38 for groups of 10 or more. Get your 9 best friends together. It is $29 per person. imagotheater.ca. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'd like to play for you some Lorraine Klassen performing live with Mongenzi Ntaka. Lorraine is based in Ontario, grew up in South Africa, came from a great lineage of South African music performers, and Lorraine is going to be performing as part of Black History Month programming here in the city at Fairmont Theater on Saturday. She's also marking 40 years in the business. And so is our next guest, Claude Caron, artistic director and choreographer at Ballet West de Montréal. We're going to learn more about this troupe and also their education component in just a second. They have a cool show coming up later this week at the Centre Pierre Palladio and elsewhere in Quebec. We'll have that conversation for you here on Upstage before the end of the hour. Beautiful sounds of vocalist Lorraine Klassen, who's going to be performing at Fairmont Theatre this Saturday evening, part of Black History Month programming. She's also marking 40 years in the business. What a beautiful voice. Another artistic outfit in the city marking 40 years is the Ballet West de Montréal. They are going to be presenting a show called 40 at the Centre Pierre Palladio, Salle Pierre Mercure on February 11th next week. And they will also be eventually touring the show in Quebec later this month. Joining us on the line is Claude Caron, who is artistic director and choreographer at the Ballet West de Montréal. Welcome to Upstage.
Thank you very much.
And congrats on your anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah, 40 years, it's a big number.
Yeah, it's pretty ambitious. I think what's important to mention is not only have you been around since 1984, but not only doing performances, but teaching as well, right? There's a big educational component to the organization.
Absolutely. We have a school that's attached to the company, so the L'École of Ballet West, and the company that is our touring company, and the company that does produce the Nutcracker every year here in Montreal and in other cities around Quebec.
So you are going to be performing a triptych. I believe you choreographed, correct me if I'm wrong, you choreographed all three parts of this particular program.
No, I did not choreograph all three parts yet. I choreographed the last ballet, which is going to be a world premiere, Le Lac où les cygnes se baignent. But the first ballet has been choreographed by one of our dancers who used to dance with us, now he's a choreographer, Kunal Ranshaw. And it's a beautiful piece. It's called Brett. When I saw the piece, I said, I need to bring it to the repertoire of the company. I think it really fits our criteria, what we represent. And the second ballet will be a classical pas de deux. It's called Flamme de Paris, which is I danced when I was a principal dancer many, many times. So it's a very classical, pure classical pas de deux. And the last ballet is Le Lac où les cygnes se baignent, and that I choreographed for the last piece.
That's wonderful. Now, I understand the first piece. I just want to go back to Breath for a moment. This is billed as neoclassic or neoclassical ballet. What is that for someone who may not know the term?
Yeah, well, Ballet West, our mandate is to keep producing and promote ballet. So we use our ballet world, or ballet technique. We use a dancer that have a strong ballet technique. And the neoclassic is really like to be able to use the ballet step or the ballet technique, but make it more fluid, make it more today. And that's why we call it neoclassic. So it's the girls are on point, and the pirouette, and all the classical element that you find in a ballet class, but with a very fluid movement and more lyrical and more and that's the approach.
Okay, so I'm speaking with Claude Caron from Ballet West de Montréal. Tell me about the piece that you worked on, the final piece, Le Lac où les cygnes se baignent. Hearing that title, it sounds like something that is very more classic, would you say?
Yes. Well, when I decided to attack Swan Lake, I look at the score. I said, well, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes score from Stravinsky. I need to do the full production. I need about 60 dancers, a budget of $2.5 million. Right away, I said, okay, it's not going to happen. So I do what I do most of the time with all the classical ballet that I take. I take the ballet, I disconstruct it, and I reconstruct it in a way that I can still tell the story. So I take all the most important element in the story and try to tell it a different way. For example, in the Le Lac où les cygnes se baignent, we are following a choreographer that is mounting the Lac des cygnes for a company. So we see his struggle. We see his rehearsing with the dancer. And also it allowed me to create a second world, which we go into his head in an imaginary world. So it allows me to do a lot of things with the multimedia and the special effect. So I play with the two worlds like this, like imaginary world and the real world. And at the end, I wanted to show also the audience the backstage of how do we create a piece? How does it mount it? How do we go about all of our day of rehearsal? And I'm showing that a little bit so the public can understand.
Claude, I wanted to ask you, okay, so that's Le Lac où les cygnes se baignent, so that is the third and final part of the triptych. You'll be performing this on Sunday at the Centre Pierre Péladeau and then taking the show on the road through different parts of Quebec, including Sainte-Thérèse, Rivière-du-Loup, and Sainte-Geneviève. What is it like when you take the ballet out of Montreal proper? It's the second biggest company in the city, but when you go to other communities, what's the reaction from the audience?
It's fabulous. I love doing that because you bring ballet to people that don't have the chance to see ballet. And they are like, you know, their eyes are so incredible, open. At the end of the performance, they want to talk to you. They want to question you. And the appreciation of on tour is absolutely amazing. I always say that the Montreal crowd is a crowd that knows a lot, you know. But on tour, they want to discover, you know. So it's a wonderful crowd, and we get standing ovation everywhere we go. The last tour we did with Cinderella was just a success, an incredible success. And I'm hoping that they're going to enjoy that one too, you know?
I hope so too. I'm sure they will, especially because this is something that's so different from the usual fare like Cinderella or the Nutcracker. You're really seeing three different pieces in one night. So where do you see your company here at 40 years, looking ahead to the future? Where does your company grow? Where does it stand?
Well, we try to stay up. When I took over the company 14 years ago, I said to the board member, I said, we need to revamp or to rethink our position. We need to stay in trend. We need to follow what's going on, you know, with other companies in the world. We need to stay current. We cannot be an old company doing old ballet, you know. Ballet is a living thing. It needs to evolve. It needs to expand. And that's what I'm trying to do with all the work that we present, to make sure that it does evolve, to make sure that it does go to a different place. And we also have to develop a new audience, too. You know, we cannot always rely on people that used to be there. We need to develop a new audience.
It's a very forward-thinking way to go, and I really appreciate hearing that kind of vision from someone like you who's at the helm of such a big company.
Well, thank you.
Claude, it's been an actual joy to speak with you. I really appreciate you making time for us. We wish you all the best for the show this coming Sunday and for the rest of the tour. Please come back on Upstage again.
Thank you very, very much.
That is the voice of Claude Caron, artistic director and choreographer at Ballet West de Montréal. I feel like I've learned a lot this evening about ballet that I didn't quite know from before. And it's so interesting to hear about someone talking about capturing new audiences, but also staying very as current as possible. Because I think we might think of ballet as kind of being frozen in time, perhaps, because it throws back to such a different time period. But if you'd like to go check this out, 40 is the triptych or the triple program in honor of the company's 40th anniversary. So they'll be performing on February 11th, that is this Sunday, at Centre Pierre Palladio at the Salle Pierre Mercure, and then touring later to Sainte-Geneviève, Sainte-Thérèse, and Rivière-du-Loup. Balletwest.com for tickets and more information. Again, the show Sunday, it's happening at 7 o'clock, actually. I think I might have said it was a matinee. Sunday at 7. So happy 40th anniversary. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. A very big thank you to my guests, including Claude Caron, Johnny Poirier, and Margie Gillis, who's marking 50 years in the dance world, as well to Xander, who did such a wonderful job chatting with Chance Jones, playing Abdul at Diggers at the Siegel Center Studio. That is on until February 17th. You can check out that show this weekend as well if you head to siegelcenter.org. Thanks to Jack Siller, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. Follow us for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. Some really cool images from all the shows we talked about tonight. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. We will be back next week with more theaters, stories about theater in Montreal. I've been your host, Sarah DeA. Up next is Grey Matters with my friend Fortner Anderson. Have a really great weekend. I'll leave you with some Taylor Swift. She's going to be, hopefully, at the Super Bowl to cheer on her boyfriend this weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl if you love football.
Good evening and welcome to the February 8th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture entitled War, the Greatest Evil. It was recorded in Troy, New York on October 21st of 2022. The lecturer is Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges is an award-winning journalist who has reported from war zones around the world. Cornell West calls him the greatest radical writer and journalist of our generation. He writes a weekly column for Sheer Post. He is the host of the Chris Hedges Report. He is the author of many books, including War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, Empire of Illusion, Death of the Liberal Class, Wages of Rebellion, Our Class, and The Greatest Evil is War. So, here's tonight's lecture, War, the Greatest Evil, by Chris Hedges.
We carry on our back this awful cross of death, for the essence of war is death. Those who know us best know that there is something unspeakable and evil many of us harbor within us. This evil is intimate, it is personal, we do not speak its name. It is the evil of things done and things left undone. It is the evil of war.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges, War,